Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Coast to Coast Combat Hour. I'm your host, Matthew Hawkins, and as always, I'm joined by my co-host, Ed Carbajal. Ed, survived UFC 300? Kinda? I guess.
First, we should open
with... How are you doing?
First, we should open with, we don't know shit about these fights anymore, because some of the calls we made, at first, I'd like to apologize to Max Holloway for not believing in him. And I keep hearing the Roy Jones Jr. You almost have forgot playing in my mind because that.
Well, listen. That was yes, I was wrong about that one. I'm not going to kick myself completely. I had the main event right. I had the co-main event right.
Yeah.
You went with Holly. Yeah. I called the mauling. I nailed the Kyla Harrison fight.
Yeah.
I had Figueiredo. Okay. So I mean, I don't think it was terrible. If I nailed them all, I'd be a multimillionaire. You know,
I actually had Figueiredo by submission, which he did. So
yeah. No, it was a top to bottom. It was as good of a night of fights that we've had in memory.
Every now and then they do something to make you remember like what they were, why we love the sport. And a card like that is like what's representative of what the UFC was and like, you know, ever since they went regulated. It was definitely, we're only going through the first quarter of the year. So far this year, it's probably the best card I've seen all year. Some of the best fights I've seen.
I mean, I think without a doubt, top to bottom, it's one of the top, if not the best, it's one of the top 2-3 UFC cards of all time. I'm not going to talk pride stuff. Here's the deal. I'm going to give you more credit because in the golden times, there was like 9 or 10 fights. Now we're like 13. This card, I believe, had 13 fights. Or was it 12? But I think it was 13 because it started at 3:30. Regardless, though, so you're adding more fights in an era where there's egos and stuff and guys not wanting to fight on the first fight of the card. You get two former champions.
Mm-hmm.
I did find it comical when people were like, oh, wow, like, Vegas is full for the first fight. Mm-hmm. And I thought to myself, like, well, of course. When you put good fights on, people are going to show up. So I don't understand. I mean, the UFC, are they going to do this very often? No, probably not, because they don't. I don't know why they wouldn't. I don't know how you can brag about gates. I don't know how you can brag about viewership. And the only thing you changed is you made every fight good.
Mm-hmm.
And every fight worthwhile of watching. And then they're confused, and it's like they reinvented the wheel, and now everybody's like, oh my gosh, ESPN viewership's up. People 9,000 people came through the gate before the first fight. All time, you know, on ESPN Plus, all time on Fight Pass, all time on ESPN, pay-per-view record break. I mean, it's like, well, okay. I mean, yeah, this is what happens. This I almost tweeted it out. I don't use Twitter as much anymore. But to me, this is the first event where I felt like it was the Super Bowl of MMA.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like this was the promise of events that we were going to have constantly when the UFC absorbed Strikeforce, Pride, WEC, everybody. And for it to take, 15 years, basically, for us to get to this point where we get an event like this. There's been 205 was great, 189 was great. A lot of those weren't the cards, though. A lot of those... 205 had a stacked card. 189 just had fights that delivered left and right. That was just a night of violence, but it was the Jeremy Stevens and stuff like that. So it wasn't the world champions necessarily. It was just the dudes going out there and putting it on the line on a big event. But I mean, I know it hurt you for the Gaethje thing, but I jumped out of my seat for Holloway. It was the most reaction I can remember since.
Well, I'll tell you this. I mean, that fight, the last time I was on my feet in my living room, the whole from round one to the end of the fight was for like maybe a Moreno Figueiredo fights, and this fight was one that as soon as it started, I was like zeroed in, watching it. You know, the thing about that fight is like I completely forgot about the intelligence that Max Holloway has in approaching, especially the stuff he kind of like said afterwards. You know, none of these guys, we know from talk when we've had fighters on the show, fighters I've interviewed, None of them like to reveal their actual game plan and what they know or don't know, what they've been studying, until it's all over with. And the stuff that Holloway knew about Gaethje going in and what he had in mind, you could tell he did his homework on him, and the stuff that he just said afterward. And even with everything he had, all the advantages and everything he went in there with, one thing that what makes Holloway cool is that he he was scared the whole time, even when he was winning. Like, he admitted after the fact that he was like, every time he heard him before he actually finished him, he said there was moments where he was like, I have him hurt, and he thought about going in for the kill, and he was like, the way he was looking at me when I heard him, he was like, I felt like he was gonna, not so many words, but he felt it was too dangerous to come at him. He called him, he said Justin Gaethje's made of titanium, and he was just like, he actually said something along the lines of like, I don't know if I'd fight him again, but he was just like, I mean, those last 10 seconds, even with all that going through his mind, and those last 10 seconds to still go and risk it all with those fears that you had, that, I mean, we completely, well-deserved title, the right guy's holding the belt right now, and I don't mind eating my words on that fight. I mean, again, I'm still Justin Gaethje all the way. You know, for his next fight, I'll be first in line talking shit for him about like the next fight. I'm still Team Gaethje because I think the dude is just, you know, something unique for this current era of MMA. But I mean, damned if Max Holloway, I don't know why I forgot about him as good as he was, but you know, I wish I didn't put my money on Gaethje. It's the first time I ever lose money on Gaethje, very first time.
Yeah, I mean, it was, you know. He put on one of the best performances of his career. And both guys came to fight. I mean, those leg kicks early from Gaethje, and Gaethje, I mean, dropped him. I know the official scores or whatever, the fuck nonsense that. Going on. I mean, it was more of a knock. It was just as much of a knockdown as Paheya stepping on Hill's foot, you know, in the main event. I mean, in theory, that was more of a trip. I know he landed a huge punch, but you know, so.
And I got to say something else because it's really fucking bothering me. It's because I had a friend call me after the Holm-Harrison fight. And the thing about that, when you were, again, you had that, you knew it from, I didn't know. I mean, Holly Holm for me, and you know, I don't like to knock fighters and stuff like that, but she's consistently the most annoying fighter that I ever, every time she fights, she does something to just completely irk me. And the one time that I pick her, that I root for her, and I think she's going to do something, opening round, she goes and does the stupidest shit ever, which is clinch with the judo Olympic gold medalist. Like, when she did that, I'm alone here. And I'm yelling out. I'm yelling like, what the fuck are you doing? And then everything you said that would happened. And I was just like, you know, she did a video afterwards where she says that wasn't the game plan. That's not what we trained for. So why the fuck did you do it? I mean, I don't know. I don't understand it, but maybe like it's one of those times that when Dana White was like, you know, I think it's time. Dana White said he'd like to see her retire. And I'm 100% agreeing with it. If you have a game plan that you train for and your team trained for, and then you go out there and do the exact, you fucking throw the whole thing out the window with no one telling you to do so, then maybe it is. I mean, she's 42. I know she could probably kick my ass, but I'm just, fuck it, dude. Like, get out.
Listen, I need to eat some crow, though, because Harrison did make weight, looked good. I mean, you know, she looked like everybody else at the weigh-ins, you know, dehydrated, you know, drawn out. But she made weight, and she went out there, and she kicked ass. And it's the title's hers. Like, barring a fluke injury during a fight or a cut or something like that, I don't see anybody even giving her I don't want to say this because it you know, there's always eventually it always kicks somebody in the ass, you know, something turns around. But if everybody shows up to their the best abilities, I don't see anybody that can beat her. Until we get like some big striker at that weight class, basically Nunes. Until Nunes comes back, like, I don't know if there's anybody that can really hang with her. I mean, Pacheco beat her, and Pacheco was, you know, on that night, and I think Harrison probably was kind of maybe over PFL mentally, you know, even going through that whole tournament. So you know, there might have been something there. Not to be in a total excuse, Pacheco and Cyborg's going to be a great fight. But
I'm bringing up the UFC ranking because we always record this on Tuesday, and that's when the rankings get updated after every event. So I just want to see where she landed. It was at bantamweight. And Harrison, she came in at number four, which home was five. So she jumped over Irene Aldana now. So now she's got Mayra Buena Silva, Ketlin Vera, Juliana Pena, and Raquel Pennington. That's who's in front of her for the bantamweight title.
If you placed odds in front of me that she would go into it and she'd fight all three of those women back to back to back, to back all four of them, I would bet money on Kyla Harrison to come out at the end of the night.
Well, I mean,
I don't see. I mean, honestly, like what Vera, maybe big punch. Like, what is, is Pena going to submit her? Like, I guess maybe if she dives into a guillotine or something. But like, barring her making a first stage jiu-jitsu error, like I don't see it. She's too strong. And if she starts using those elbows, she couldn't use elbows in PFL. This is the first time we really saw her throw elbows.
And yeah, outside of her Invicta thing. Yeah, yeah. That's I mean, she wrecked when she'd use them in Invicta, and she really liked it, and she obviously put work in with those there at 300. What do you think about? It seemed like that's something that could lure Nunes back.
It seemed like to be the case. I would like to see Nunes stay away a little bit, though. Like, let the division maybe kind of grow a little bit without her there. Because if she comes back and beats Harrison, then you might as well close the division down.
Yeah.
You know, like, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, I think we've got to look at 2 years, maybe. Mm-hmm. And if Harrison's able to defend that, you get the belt and maybe defend it, like, three times.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Against those people. Then I think that maybe even once or two defense, depending on how dominant it is and how long it takes those fights to happen.
And plus, but, I mean, at the end of the day, the UFC looks at marketability numbers and what they can draw. So if they could do it next weekend because everything, you know, points to that with all the data they do, I mean, you know, it could happen whenever. We know the rankings are just kind of like a backup planning sheet. We know my rankings don't matter.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't like Harrison like calling for an interim title shot in June. I didn't like that. I thought that was a little premature, although I do think that she should be properly ranked now for her first fight in the UFC. But I think that was a little disrespectful. I know Pennington wants to wait, I think, more towards the endish of the year. You know, she won the title. First time champ, long time fighter. I don't want to disrespect Raquel Pennington. If she wants to sit on the title for 6 months, like I'm not going to hold that against somebody. I don't think she's going to hold it much after that. So I'm okay with her kind of, you know, having the title, being a champ for a little while here and that kind of stuff. But I'd like to see Harrison take another fight. I think she's basically a number one at four. If she beats one of the three ladies in front of her, she essentially, you know, becomes the number one contender. I think that's a great main card fight for June. You know, if they wanted to do her and Buena Silva or her and Vieira or I don't know, though, everybody's booked out right now, but any of those fights, I think is a good qualifying fight for her to then look towards the end of the year. She always acted like she was fairly active, especially during the tournament time of PFL, and she seemed to want to fight when she wasn't fighting. So let's hope that, you know, the UFC kind of just lets her fight and she doesn't necessarily wait for the title, because I think she's so much better than everybody. I don't think she's not in the Justin Gaethje situation. Gaethje took a chance fighting Holloway.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think that's the kind of thing. She's not guaranteed any kind of title right now. Nothing like that.
Yeah.
So I'd like to see her just kind of wreck some people, make some highlights and become that wrecking machine that you're blueprinted to be.
You know, going back to Justin Gaethje and Holloway, one of the other things I came to kind of like, I feel like I didn't notice because of my whole fanboyness about the guy. You know, we always talk about the Justin Gaethje effect and how fights with him and the other fighters kind of carry the damage from their fights into their fights after him. But he takes a lot of damage too. And I think I'm not taking into account that he's starting to show that. The fact that Holloway was able to hurt him so early in the first round. With that, with that kick that cracked his nose. I mean, it's crazy that spinning kick is something Holloway only, I think he used it like maybe once before, but like it's something that him in his tape study that, again, he said after the fact that I'm trying to remember, I don't remember word for word, but he was like, when you hit him, he doesn't go anywhere. When he tries to counterpunch, he doesn't go anywhere. And he was talking about his lack of like foot movement and head movement. So if you watch the fight again, you see Holloway's side to side, like in and out, you know, combos and then exits and then circles. Even before that final exchange happened, he was circling him. He went back and then around and then called him to the center of the, he was controlling the space, even though he was on the outside, which is, you know, a lot of people that call themselves fight analysts say, oh, you know, taking the center of the cage, it's usually that guy's fight, but that's not necessarily the case. If you want the space and the range, you know, guys like Adesanya, guys that have wrestling backgrounds that put their back to the cage so they have the rest of the space so they could drive into you for takedowns. That's not always the case. And man, Holloway definitely. I don't know what do you even want to see him do next? I mean, he seemed to want Topuria, I mean, today he did an interview with Honolulu, a local Honolulu station, where he said it's either he'd like to Topuria, or if not, he wants McGregor. Which I'm kind of like, why are you even going to mention? I know McGregor's a money fight, but you know, you don't even know if he's for sure. Even though they announced it, we still don't know if he's for sure coming back against Chandler until I see him in the same city as Chandler and you know, doing things to make weight. I still don't feel like we're too far out to guarantee that fight's going to happen.
Yes, but to be fair to McGregor, when his name's been on the marquee, he's always showed up. So I don't, when the money's on the table and his name and reputation as far as that goes, that's he true. Seems to be pretty good with that. So, and Chandler ain't missing the fight. If Chandler might break his neck next week and he's going to show up in a wheelchair. Yeah, I mean, he's, you know, like he no. So, I mean, I don't know what, Topuria sounds awfully tasty of a fight. I mean, you talk about style-wise, it's kind of similar to what we just saw. I mean, not so much, but two guys who can really put each other's lights out. And you know, Holloway was more of a, you know, he knocked him out with that, but he's, you know, he's like we said though, he's more of a, it's the bulk, it's the Nick Nate Diaz effect, you know, where he just keeps hitting you and hitting you and hitting you. This was the first time this was just two guys who basically did, let's take 10 steps, turn around and draw. I mean, that's what we got here. I almost feel like Gaethje's newer style of kind of precision Gaethje and thinking Gaethje almost hurts him in that fight. Had he gone in there like the whirlwind he used to be, like in World Series of Fighting in his first couple, and he just went out there and it was pointing to the ground in round one, without a broken nose and all that, I feel like that was more the fight that he could have, you know, the longer that fight went, it was always going to be trouble for Gaethje, I felt like, because that meant he wasn't hurting Holloway to the point where he's putting him out.
Yeah, no, like, the nose thing was definitely a heavy, heavy factor in that fight. And again, I'm not making excuses for him, because even Holloway even said, if it was any other fighter, you know, because you know, the training at altitude that Gaethje does out there and with wherever Whitman's camp is, I'm forgetting right now, but
New Mexico, no
elevation, where the hell is
Colorado
team? Yeah. So even Holloway was like, if it was anyone else that didn't train at elevation like he does, with the nose issue messing with his breathing, they would have quit from fatigue or whatever earlier than that. Plus, I mean, the people he had in his corner, I mean, because his nose looked good after it happened, like maybe round two, round three, and then it didn't seem like it started bothering him until the championship rounds. I think that's why he was able to drop Holloway in the second round. But a rematch with them wouldn't look be too bad either. But I mean, that knockout, I don't think we're going to see Jake Gaethje for a while.
That fight should stand alone. It was a great fight. It had the most epic ending maybe ever. I don't feel like we need to do that. I don't think Gaethje doesn't need to prove anything. You know what I mean? Like, there's guys out there for him to fight. There's still a bunch of good fights. And, you know, even at 170, maybe he doesn't cut anymore. And he just says, hey, I'm going to bulk up a little bit and let's go, you know, go for Colby Covington or something like that. I don't know. I don't know. I think I think at this point in his career, title shot or title's probably not in the picture for the UFC. I mean, and I say that meaning that he has a chance to still have a handful of just epic money-making fights. And I don't think that's terrible, but I don't think he wins them all. You know, I don't against that killer row of the lightweights, it's going to be hard to go on another. Well, you don't have to, I guess. Poirier's on a one-fight win streak. I mean, it's the right place, right time. You just got to have a big win. He needs to go out there and knock a top five, top six guy's head off in his next fight, get back after, like, the James Vick kind of hype and the, you know, that kind of thing where he was just, you know, decapitating fools. He needs to really do that again, and then all of a sudden he's back in the mix because he's always a fighter everybody wants to watch.
Yeah.
But I mean, a Chandler rematch down the line, a McGregor fight with him to me still is a good fight.
I would love to see it just for malicious reasons. I don't know, but I don't see them. I don't see them putting him. I mean, they seem to do like matching McGregor. McGregor seems to call his own shots. Number one, number two. It seems like the fights McGregor is going to get now is going to be fights like this fight with that they announced with Chandler. You know, these guys that are kind of, you know, on the they're on their, like, maybe the last leg of their career, however many years it may be. So I don't know if Gaethje's there. I guess maybe he is with all the wars he's been in. But that's a fight that I mean, they tried to make it before. There.
Like, if McGregor wins and he doesn't get a title shot, I think Gaethje's probably a good fight. Right, like it's two top five guys at that point fighting. Yeah. Like, I mean, I don't. It would be, you know. And then you know, I don't know. To me, to me, it's not a good fight for Gaethje because I feel like McGregor could potentially be like essentially what we saw with Holloway. I think the straight punches can just cause damage. But
the other thing about McGregor too is even if he does, like you said, if his name's on the marquee, he'll do International Fight Week, whatever. But then after that, do we go through all this again for another fucking year to get him in another, like, you know what I mean? Like
if he wins, I would say that he probably wants to fight at MSG a couple months later.
Yeah.
Cause at that point he'll have a new contract or he'll be on the end of his contract. And he's going to want to get it over with. I could see that happening. It wouldn't surprise me if he tries to stay active. Because, I mean, he can't be stupid. He's got to know that if he steps away again and he keeps doing what he was doing in between these last fights, it's over.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, so I don't know. I think Chandler obviously gives him, you know, brings a lot to the table in a fight against him. Mainly a big puncher who can, you know, who's going to go in there and try to bulldog you. Mm-hmm. So I feel like he's almost like a super version of Mendez. And we saw what Mendez did, you know, for those first two rounds, you know, for the first round in 4 minutes and 50 seconds. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like that's potentially what could be. I don't think Chandler will necessarily use his wrestling like that, but I don't know why he wouldn't. It's always been one of Chandler's great weapons has been his ability to take someone down, control him, and beat him up. And it's, you know, it's kind of do or die for him in this fight. You go 1-4 in the UFC, you're pretty much, although fighting the best of the best, you're going to be considered a bit of a washout.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have to, you know, it might be a retirement fight for him anyway, the amount of money he might make off the fight.
Being shelved as long as he has, and you know what I mean, waiting for this because he pretty much had to wait for McGregor to do all his, I forget what Dana White said about the stuff with the movie, that horrible movie, but
Yeah, I mean, it's been a long waiting game, and I was the first to say I never thought this would happen. I mean, obviously, it's taken about 2 years, so it's not like I was completely wrong initially, but yeah, it's going to happen.
What's up, Antoine? Antoine Willis chiming in asking, do you think Chandler gets a title shot if he beats Connor? No, I do not. I think... Well,
bring the ranking. Do you have the rankings still available, Ed?
Yeah, I can bring them up.
Throw those back up real quick. Let me take a look at it. Let's try to figure out what we got here. Because we also got announced for UFC 302 in Newark on June 1st. Dustin Poirier getting the title shot against Islam Makhachev. Where we got here? Chandler's at 7.
Mm-hmm.
You already got Poirier getting one. I would say Dariush and Gamrot are irrelevant. If Chandler wins, he jumps them easily. Gaethje coming off a loss. Oliveira coming off a loss. I suppose perhaps. I mean, if Saryukin's not ready to fight and the champ wants a quick turnaround, I suppose it's not out of the question that the winner of this fight could, even Conor McGregor. I mean, yeah, he'd be the first one to jump in line with, but you know, I mean, Gagey's going to have a, some time off, and he can't fight for the title coming off of that loss. And Oliveira, like I say, yeah, same thing. He's already lost to the champ and he's coming off a loss. I mean, Saryukin, as long as Saryukin wants to fight, I think the next fight will be his after Poirier. Unless Poirier wins. If Poirier wins, then it could be anything and anybody at that point. Yeah. Chandler Poirier rematch, mm-hmm. Chandler McGregor, McGregor Poirier. What would be four? You know, so that, yeah, I don't think it's out of the question.
Yeah, I mean, a win would insert him into obviously the top 10, but
it would get him in the where he just needs to be in the right place in the right time.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
So you can already turning down a title shot on a quick turnaround though. I really don't blame him. You know, but
that's another good question he's Antoine's asking. Also, do you guys think Dustin retires in the cage this summer if he loses? It's already kind of been mentioned more than enough times to that one thing Dana White said, I forget, I think he said it way years back when it was came up to Chuck Liddell's retirement or whoever. But when he said once guys start saying it and thinking about it, you know, it's probably time to do it. And that seems to have been something that's held true as long as I've been watching the sport. Anyone that considers it, or if it's floating around in their mind, it's because there's something inside of them, their body, whether it be mental or just the aches and pains aren't going away as fast. You know, you don't know what these guys are, especially with the way the fighters train now and what the UFC demands of them. It just keeps, it's another bar. It's another level. It's another level. And only a young man's body can keep up with that. So I wouldn't be surprised. I wouldn't be surprised if an L comes, he does decide to hang it up.
You know, I suppose it could matter how he loses, as well, but yeah, but I don't think that would be the end of Dustin Poirier. I don't think that would be his last fight. He might take a couple years off, but I feel like we would see Dustin Poirier in some other form or fashion. Maybe it's in like the boxing circuit kind of thing going on or something. I mean, he is known for his hands, so that's a possibility. I just don't think it would be the end of him in combat sports, but I could see him stepping away from some of the grind of everything that's involved.
He's up for 302, right? The Newark one? Yes. So speaking of 302, that's a nice way to segue into something that I know that actually we meant to talk about at the beginning of the podcast, but I was just I'm so aggravated with how wrong I was about 300. We jumped right into that. But the new gloves, remember we mentioned them last week. UFC's got new gloves finally on the horizon. It only took them Lord knows how long to get new gloves. The first reaction, I was guilty of it too. First thing I want to say was, what does it do about eye pokes? And there was media in attendance when I did the presentation. The presentation's on their YouTube channel. If you haven't seen it, you should watch it, because it is addressed, and the gloves do address eye pokes. I wrote a pretty good article about it over at MyMMAnews.com if you want to check it out. And if you subscribe to my newsletter, I actually went a little deeper. I caught the Eric McGracken combat sports law disease and went down this MMA glove rabbit hole where we've had Matt Marsden on the podcast talking about Bellator's gloves. So in 2014, Everlast made this Powerlock MMA glove, which is the gloves that the Bellator we know and love use from 2014, the last year Bjorn Rebney was president of Bellator, right through the whole Scott Coker era up until last December. And that was a glove that pretty much, I found the, again, it's in my newsletter, but I found the article where they talk about the glove design and everything, and it's pretty much everything that the Everlast glove is doing or has did, you know, a better curvature in the hand. You can make a tighter fist, you can make better grips. And, you know, it's supposed to make it easier and less likely for you to want to do this with your hands, just to get your hands blood flowing in your hands because the leather's not as thick and stuff like that. So the new gloves are supposed to debut at UFC 302. People were right away. They're talking about the Holloway Gaethje fight because Holloway did poke Gaethje in the eye twice, but the gloves weren't being used yet. The only time they were used before they announced him was in the last contender series, Dana White contender series, because Duncan French from the UFCPI, senior VP of the UFCPI, he was at the presentation. And he said that's where they collected the data to see if they were working. And of all the contender series, that was the one where they saw a lower or reduced occurrence of eye pokes. So they definitely addressed that, and we'll see. I mean, time will tell, but the time starts at UFC 302. So if you didn't check out, go to MiamiMinews.com and read my gloves piece if you want more details on that. But for all of us that had the knee-jerk reaction of trying to shit on the UFC not doing anything about it, they finally are. But again, they could have also done it in 2014 when Everlast put out pretty much the same gloves. So I just wanted to make sure I mentioned that because I went into the glove black hole over the weekend.
No, that's good to hear because I was just kind of seeing the same thing, like, oh, they're gold now. Sweet.
Yeah, that's but that's, I mean, to the detriment, the UFC is so corporate and you know, everything's all about making sure you mention, oh, our partners and the deals and here's the new colors. So the safety part kind of went under the radar. It was the push was, look at all our colors. This color is going to be for X, Y, and Z, and the, you know, gold for champions and red for, you know, a road to UFC and blah blah blah, and that all kind of overshadowed what I forget the lady's name I think they have like a consumer or department. I forget her position, but it's in the video. But she the first thing they mentioned is the eye pokes. And again, Duncan French, that was sitting there with Brendan Fitzgerald. And in front of all the media that was in attendance, you would have thought someone else would have wrote something more about that or talked about it, addressed it. But all we saw was them holding up pictures in their own personal social media and saying, hey, look at the new gloves. Hey, these feel pretty cool. But yeah, there seems to have been a lot of homework done on them. Again, Everlast had the gloves out, but you know, the UFC likes to say they made their own thing, so they finally did with this. So I'm glad to hear that one.
Good. So we'll see that going forward in 302 in June, as well through Fight Week and moving on through the future. I guess the immediate future is this Friday. Or is that your guess as good as mine on what night PFL is on? Is it?
It's, you know, Friday.
Sometime between now and Sunday, there will be a PFL event. Depends which way the moon is facing on the, you know, solar. Mm. But I guess Friday.
Friday.
And wasn't really going to really acknowledge it because they do such a, you know, they don't do a good job letting us know this stuff that's going on.
You want to know what's crazy? I couldn't help but laugh my ass off at the UFC 300 post-fight press conference. Dana White came at them so hard about that. I hope that it makes them do a better job about letting stuff know. You know, I guess that maybe in their minds that just posting on social media is enough. I mean, you're on ESPN. I don't know. I don't know what it is. But Dana White was like, I didn't even know there was a PFL. Until someone like told him that there was one the night before UFC 300. And the funny thing is there was media there. This is my little shot at the folks that, you know, who licks the UFC's boot heels when it comes to. So there was media there that covered both the PFL and UFC 300. However, because there was a power slap event also on Friday night, there's media that went to the power slap and UFC 300. So, you know, who's doing what.
Kevin Ioli must have been up all night just enjoying all that stuff.
Yeah.
Licking away.
Yeah. He's licking all right. He's licking something, but.
Sorry. Yeah, yeah. Sorry. No. You start mentioning the shills who lick
boots. Dude. No, because
the leader of the pack.
Yeah. Like, you know, like James Lynch was out there. He went out there to work. He was out there for Sportskeeda. He was at PFL. He was at UFC 300. He did his stuff on his YouTube channel. I even chimed in on the Q&A live that he did from his hotel room. So when James Lynch gets to an event, he goes all in. But there was other people that were there just to make sure they stay in the good graces of, you know, it is what it is. But anyway, who those people are.
So there was a PFL. See, this is where I'm going to question Dana White. So on Friday night, with the competition being an organization that's selling buy two, get two free tickets and putting about 400 people in the crowd. According to Dana White, power slap is the fastest growing sport in the planet with one championship level viewership.
I was going to say.
And was there a lot of live crowd? Was there no arenas in Vegas available to have it the night before UFC 300? I mean, I'm sure 12,000 people would have showed up to the MGM Grand Garden, right? Like, I mean, obviously not. They couldn't get they couldn't even get the PFL crowd to show up to Slap Fight. That's why they don't do it. Otherwise, they would. They could have the Cox basketball gym at it used to be called Cox Pavilion, where they had Fight Night One at UNLV. I mean, there's a million small little places you could put 4,000 or 5,000 people, but no. I mean, so I think that's a joke. Slap Fight is insanely stupid, and the fact that I don't know. I mean, it's TikTok sports, so maybe that's where it gets its thing, its views, and it's
a good
fame
name
and
for
glory.
It. Yeah, TikTok sports, right up
well,
there.
Well, I've been calling Tyson right now because, like, the Tyson fight, the Jake Paul Tyson thing. Like, I've seen more people come out of the woodwork and be like, "My God, have you seen that training footage?" And I'm like, well, yeah, the one where it's sped up and it's TikTok. I'm like, this is the first promoted. This is like the first ever TikTok Tyson fight. Like, it's we're getting a 60-year-old man in TikTok videos, basically with like 5-second clips sped up 4x speed. And people are falling over for themselves like, oh, he's going to murder Jake Paul. Like, I mean, and it's like you're falling for it. Like, they even know it's a joke. They don't even know what the rules are going to be right now because they got a 60-year-old man going in the ring. And people are like, oh, you know, I don't know. Maybe Tyson wins. I would not put a penny on him to win. I think he actually
probably it's going
to
be on Netflix, though, so that's good.
I'm going to watch it. And I didn't even mean to bring this up, but the co-main event got announced today.
Yeah. Katie Taylor and Amanda Serrano.
Great women's boxing match, rematch from their first title fight where they sold out MSG. So that's actually, that's great. And that's what I like about Jake Paul. Jake Paul's giving these women the eyes that they both deserve. Not everybody's into women's boxing. I get it. But that's not the point. These are the two of the best women boxers in the world. Arguably the best, top two, maybe the top three if you start Cameron and a couple of those other women in there. But I mean, this is it. So they get a co-main event. They're going to get a huge payday. Get to fight in Dallas Stadium. You know, I think it's a bit of a testament. Depending on how many people they get there. I mean, is it going to be like, you know, K1 where they did at the Coliseum and, you know, there was 18,000 people in 120,000 seat arena? Or are we going to get, you know, are they going to get 80,000 people to show up? You know, I mean, I don't know. It's a big location, Dallas, lots of people. But I don't know what the ticket prices are going to be. I don't know what the, you know, it's all about the promotion. We don't, you know, and I don't know. I guess you promote through stuff that we don't see very often anymore because, you know, it seems like very, very light.
Yeah, I was actually surprised to get that press release today from Most Valuable Promotions about the Serrano-Taylor thing. But, I mean, it looks like they're turning up the volume and saying, like, let's reach out to as many people as we can to get the word out. So, I mean, that's one thing. I mean, you know, how you call John Jones is a natural fighter athlete. You know, Jake Paul is definitely a natural at marketing. If you watch his Untold on Netflix, you'll see that it's just something that came natural, especially when he talks about how he gets started. I mean, he's somebody that I can't help, after seeing how he's come into our space, I can't help but be interested in how his mind works and how he just manages to draw attention to folks. So good job. Whatever he's doing, he does a better job than the PFL.
No, that's true. But I would I don't know. I'm not a ton on Netflix, but like I would think that like you would start turning your Netflix on and the main first screen you would see should be, hey, reminder, June, whatever, Tyson versus Paul. Like that's how you're gonna get the eyes of like the casual, you know, guy who doesn't really follow fights but sees Mike Tyson's name. And like that's how you know, I would think the people that are already subscribed to Netflix, so they're gonna be, you know, they're on it a lot. But that's a ways down the line.
Yeah, it is a ways down the line. Not too far down the line. I'm just one last question from Antoine here. That's pretty good. How do you feel about Strickland versus Costa 5-round co-main event? I meant to ask you that when it got announced. What do you think about that fight? I don't know if I'm like, I don't know if it's interesting enough. I think co-main event is right, the correct placement for that fight, but a lot of 5-round co-main events lately.
I like that. when it's an important fight. Mm-hmm. I don't know how important this is because I don't think Costa's really a top contender at this point coming off of a loss. I know Strickland is as well, but his was a title fight. Seems to me this is kind of Strickland taking like the entertaining fight for a promise from the UFC to get a title fight with a win here. I like Costa. I like him a lot. He's one of my favorite dudes to watch fight because I know he always brings it. I just think the stylistically, I think Strickland might be able to shut him down. If he uses his boxing any bit like he's done against Duplessis and against Adesanya, I think he'll keep Costa away with his punches, and I think he'll avoid the big shot. So I would probably lean Strickland, but I'll probably be rooting for Costa to pull off some wheel kick or some lunacy and then watch him jump around the cage like, you know, Mark Coleman at the Pride Grand Prix, that guy kind of thing, you know, where he's going crazy. So I don't know. Entertaining fight, co-main event, I guess. It's hard coming off this last card because I want to be like, well, that should probably be the opening fight for the pay-per-view. You know,
there's no UFC this weekend, and I think that's a great move by them because we do need this card. The card was so great. It gives people a little bit of scarcity because they don't take off that often, and it gives folks time to kind of just like absorb, you know, what a great event it was. They really did such a good job.
I know it's less fights, but my God, I feel like it would be so much more if your next one you were looking forward to was May 4th and you just knew there was another pay-per-view with another title fight and Jose Aldo coming back. Like I feel, as opposed to like, all right, let's get ready for, I don't know, I don't want to disrespect anybody, but let's get ready for the 18th ranked heavyweight against the 13th ranked heavyweight, you know, in an Apex. Like, to me, it's a momentum killer, you know? So I don't know, but I don't think we have anything that's going to blow the doors off until even the next pay-per-view is not great, but Pantoja and Aldo is can't miss dudes. And then after that, it's, you know, the McGregor or the Poirier. I mean, that card's probably going to be good. They seem to like New Jersey right now. You seem to be kind of the favorable corner there, getting a couple events so close together.
Yeah.
So it's good for the East Coast because
a little dry out here. Yeah.
COVID, I feel like it was awfully dry. I feel like the West Coast kind of got a little bit more kick early with that stuff coming back. But I mean, like I said, Korshkov fighting the main event. Some really good fights this weekend Friday on PFL. Mm-hmm. So tune in for that if you can find it. I believe it'll probably be ESPN+. I think that pretty much wraps us up. Next weekend, we will have our BKFC Knuckle Mania 4 preview show, as I will be heading to Knuckle Mania a week from this Saturday.
That's right. To enjoy
the blood and guts of that.
That's a good one.
Yeah, so we get to look forward to that next week. Until then, check out the show at Combat Hour on Twitter, Coast to Coast Combat Hour on Instagram. Follow me, Matthew Hawkins, at MMAHawk21 on Twitter and Instagram. Follow Ed at Carbazol on Twitter, Carbbeerzol on Instagram, and Oldhead Carb on Twitch. Thank you for the questions. Thank you for listening, everyone, and have a good night.
Peace.